Welcome to another C3 Church Rockingham podcast. For more information about C3 Rockingham, please visit www.c3r.org.au.
How many got their Bibles? Bibles, iPhone, iPad, smartphone, whatever you got. Are you ready? I want you to find Second Kings, chapter 5. 2 Kings, chapter 5. Verse 1. I'm going to read this to you. I want you to think. Think with me. There's a powerful thought in this. And the thought behind it is simply this, that one small act could change and can make a difference in the life of a human being. You know, it's amazing that small things make big things happen. Little hinges swing big doors. Historically, if you ever look at the shift of history, you'll discover that great things happen through little causes. It's always been that way. A little leaven. Jesus said leaven's the whole lump. Little things, good or bad, can make big things happen. Small things create big things. Wars began because of small words that were spoken. Goodyear invented galvanized rubber, and that's why you drove here tonight, because of a guy named Goodyear that went up to a tree and he stripped from the tree. I'm trying to think what it was, but he accidentally dropped something on a hot stove. It vulcanized. And that's how rubber was discovered. And that's where you got your tires from. Small things make big things happen. There was Pope Adrian choked on a gnat and died and changed the structure of the Catholic Church. A gnat that he choked on changed history. Small things make big things happen. And when you look at it, small acts can change people. Small things that we do can have a great effect that we don't even recognize. So I want to talk about that from this story. It's found in 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 1. It says, Now Naaman, commander, listen to this, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master. It's talking about this guy named Naaman. He was the commander, the general of the military. And it begins to describe him. It starts out just describing him. He was the commander, the general of the armies of the king of Syria. He was great. He was an honorable man in the eyes of his master, because by him, the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was also a mighty man and a man of valor. Now, just pause right there. This guy was an incredible leader, an incredible general. I mean, look at the accolades that God begins to list when he talks about this individual. He was this. He was a mighty man. He was this. And then all of a sudden, the conversation shifts. You see it shift? It just shifts. And you come over here. Where are we now? Look at it. But, see right there? See, look. Now Naaman, commander of the armies of the king of Syria. He was great. He was honorable man in the eyes of his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was also a mighty man of valor, but he was a leper. This guy had to have been head and shoulders better than anybody else in his category because he was a leper. What ruler of a nation would take a leper and make him the commander of the military? I mean, that is, he had to have been exceptional. He had to have been great to be filled with leprosy. Have you ever seen leprosy? I mean, leprosy is not a beautiful thing to look at. I can remember years ago being in a leper colony. I was in India, walked into a leper colony. I've been in several colonies before. This particular one, I remember walking through it, and there was a leper sitting there. He was blind. He had no fingers, no nose, no toes. And the only way he could distinguish what currency or what amount of currency, I never saw anything like it. If you handed him money, he would put it in his mouth, and he could feel it, and he could tell you what it was, what kind of note it was, whether it was a 5, a 20, a 50, a 100. He could put it in his mouth and tell you. And I remember, because we gave him some money, and he put it in his mouth. It went like that, and he told us exactly what it was. He's blind. I mean, you can't walk. When leprosy takes over your body, you can no longer walk. You just sit. You bandage yourself. You're hiding your ugliness. So this individual must have been exceptional for the king of Syria to put him in this position. And then he gives all these accolades. He says, but he was a leper. Now, continue to look at this. This is an incredible story. But he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out on raids, and they brought back captive a young girl from the land of Israel. She waited on Naaman's wife. Then she said to her mistress, I want to pause there. This is an incredible story. They went out on a raid, and they found this young, they took as a prisoner, as a slave, this young Israelin girl. The Bible gives her no name. I'm sure she had a name, but it doesn't tell us her name. She was probably in the neighborhood of 13 to 14 years of age. She was just a young girl, just a young girl. And she became the mistress to Naaman's wife, the helper. And so you got a picture of this story. Here was this girl. That's a bad step. Here was this girl. Here was this young Israelin girl that she was a slave. They just took her. They stick her in a household she's never been in. She's 13, 14 years old. She begins to serve Naaman's wife in whatever she wanted. And this young girl changed the history of the world at that time. A girl with no name. We don't know anything about her background. It only has, I think, two verses that even talk about this girl. And I'm convinced that the reason why the Bible does not list her name, does not give us hardly any background on this girl, is because she is a representation of us. She is us. She is what we can be. One small act can make a difference. One small thing that we do can affect history. I'll never forget the story. It's a story I've told all over the world. It's an amazing story about an 80-year-old Scottish pastor that pastored the same church for 60 years. It was a little church. It's in Scotland, small church in the 1800s. Would have gone down historically as an insignificant church. Now, I don't believe any church is insignificant, but history could have wrote it off. Nobody would have had any memory of an 80-year-old Scottish pastor that faithfully pastored the same church for 60 years. After 60, he was 80 years old. At the end of 60 years, and he was 80, his denomination came to him, and they asked him to retire. He said, I don't want to. They said, how old are you? He said, 80. They said, you're too old. He said, this is all I've done. This is all I know. This is all I want to do. So they decided to create a criteria to determine whether he was successful. Now, we got to understand something. Our criteria of success is not God's. We create something because we're so limited in our perspective of what we see in a person's life, and God isn't. He sees the end from the beginning. You cannot judge the value of a human life in their lifetime, because the Bible said even in our death, we still speak. You cannot do that. We do that, but you can't do that. So they asked him two questions to determine whether they would allow him to continue to pastor. The first question they asked him is how many converts have you had? See, we're going to create a numerical criteria to determine the value of a human being. You cannot create a numerical criteria to determine a person's value in God's kingdom. You can't do it. So they asked him, how many converts did you have last year? He said, one. They said, that's terrible. So then they decided to take that and ask him another question. Who was it? Was it a businessman? Well, you see, that's good because he can give money. Was it a businessman? He said, no. And maybe a politician. We can get influence in the community. No, he said, no, it wasn't that either. Well, who was this convert? He said it was a 9-year-old boy whose parents are so poor they orphaned him. And my wife and I have taken him in and are going to raise him as our son. They said, that's terrible. Not only did you only have one convert, but that one convert is a 9-year-old boy that becomes a deficit to the church because now you have to feed him, which means he takes money out, doesn't put money in. So they forced retirement on the Scottish pastor. But the story doesn't end there. That 80-year-old husband and wife took that 9-year-old boy and raised him. See, there's a unique thing about all children. They grow up. He grew up with the heart of this pastor inside of him. His name was Robert Moffat. He became the first white missionary that ever stepped foot on the African continent. He went all the way down to Cape Town and then began to work himself north. From Cape Town, he worked up into Botswana. I have been in the hospital that he established that his great, great, great grandson still runs to this day in the nation of Botswana. The story doesn't end there. Robert Moffat spent 30 years of his life preaching the gospel all through the southern hemisphere of Africa. He returned to Great Britain, and he was giving a public speech in a small classroom where there was 232 young people present. He said from his mouth, he was explaining what he had done, and he said this, and it's an exact quote. He said, I've just returned from the northern parts of Africa, northern meaning anything from the southern part up, you know, there was a southern hemisphere. He said, I've just returned from the northern parts of Africa where I have seen the smoke rise from 1,000 villages a day that have never heard the gospel of Jesus Christ. When those words left the mouth and the heart of this missionary, I'm sure they bypassed almost 232 young people. They all heard the words, but there was one young man, second row from the back at the end seat. And when those words left his heart and his mouth, they moved across that auditorium and they penetrated into the heart of this young 20-something-year-old young man. Those words begin to burn on the inside of him. And I pray today that something burns on the inside of you. They begin to burn on the inside of that young man. And he said within himself, I will go. His name, the world knows as David Livingstone, the greatest missionary next to the Apostle Paul that ever walked the face of the earth. He married Robert Moffat's daughter, Mary Moffat. He started his first work. I've walked on the very spot, stood there on the rocks that his hands took where he built his first mission station, and I stood on those rocks and prayed. Then I took one of those rocks home. Oh, it's true. I called it a living stone from Livingston. I stood, and he started there. He was the only man at that time that ever walked the breadth of Africa from the Atlantic to the Indian Ocean. Took him 4.5 years. He did 3 expeditions. He spoke 32 separate African languages, or no, 16 different African languages. He stayed there for 32 years. They said he became more African than he did English. He had a heart for the people. He ended slavery. He was the liberator of East Africa. He ended all Arab slave trading. After his death, it ended. He was on a quest to stop it because he hated slavery. He brought the gospel. They said in his lifetime, he only had probably at the most 5 converts, but he affected to this day. You can trace back everything that's going on in Africa to a guy by the name of David Livingstone, and then you can go to a Robert Moffat. Then you're going to go to an 80-year-old Scottish pastor. When Livingstone died, he died in Zambia, and they found him with open ulcers on his feet in a prayer posture where rigor mortis had set in. They picked his body, wrapped it in a casket. It was the longest funeral procession in the history of the world. They carried his body for 9 months, 1,500 kilometers through Central Africa all the way to the coast of Tanzania to ship his body back to England. England wanted his body. The Africans said, you can't have it. They cut him open. They took out his heart and his entrails. They buried him in the heart of Africa and said, you can have his body, but his heart belongs to Africa. One small act has affected a continent of 57 nations. One small act, because one Scottish pastor took a 9-year-old boy and put his heart into him and affected, after his death, an entire continent. That's what small acts do. We never know the ripple of what occurs. You can throw a rock into the water, it ripples. You never know how far the ripple goes. You can't measure something based on a numerical account, a financial account. You can't do it. You can't do it. You have no idea. You and I can walk out of this auditorium. I can remember a guy years ago when Ginger and I had just gotten married. I heard this preacher. He was from Kansas, the state of Kansas. The state of Kansas, one of the ugliest states in America. And just flat. It's all flat. They have all tornadoes. And he was in a grocery store. Walking out, the last guy to walk out of a grocery store one evening, it was late, they were going to close up, and he was nice to the young girl that was checking him out. He was the only guy left. He was just nice to her. He was just nice. That's all. He was nice. Jesus went about doing good and healing. Acts of kindness, good. He was just nice. Just nice. Some Christians aren't nice. They're not nice. He was nice. She came to the church several weeks later. She looked at the pastor. She responded to an altar call, gave her heart to Jesus, and told him the story. She said, what you don't know is I was going to take my life that night. I had every intention of committing suicide. You were the last customer we had. As soon as I locked up, it was over with. But your kindness affected me. So I came to your church, and she got saved. At little things make big things happen. Small acts. Here's one slave girl. It said, listen to this. Verse 3. She said to her mistress, if only my master were with the prophet. She's talking about the prophet Elijah, the prophet who is in Samaria, he would heal him of his leprosy. Why would they take the word of a slave girl? What was it about this little 13, 14-year-old Israeli slave girl that's brought as a slave? She has no status. She has no pedigree. She is a slave, and she had the courage to look at her mistress in the face and said, I know somebody that can heal your husband. I know somebody. He comes from my country. He's a prophet of God. He can heal your master, your husband. He can heal him of leprosy. Why'd they listen to her? I'm going to give you a couple reasons why. You ready for this? Because it's the same. Because she is us. The first thing that I think If you want to make a difference, you have to be confident. Now, what do I mean by that? You see, the tendency in our life, you remember there's a story in the Bible about a guy, it's about talents or gifts, abilities. And one of them had five, the other one had two, and the other one had one. And the boss, the master, the head honcho, he leaves, he comes back, and when he leaves, the guy that had five used what he had and made 10. The one that had two used what he had and ended up with four. The guy that had the one took his and buried it. It's an amazing story, because if you read the words the first guy spoke, and you read the word, the first guy in the New King James Bible, the first guy spoke 16 words. The second guy spoke 16 words when the master came back and asked him what he did. 16 words, 16 words. The third guy spoke 48 words. He that does the least talks the most and requires the most attention. It's always been that way. He that does the least talks the most and requires the most attention. That's the truth. Now, I never liked this guy. I used to preach this message. I used to call him Howard the Coward. I nicknamed him. I didn't like him. I call him a Democrat. You wouldn't know that unless you live in America. I didn't like him. I made fun of this guy until I recognized one time he's more like me than any of the other two. Because the reason why he buried what he had is the same reason why you and I bury what we have. Because in our mind, it's not significant enough to get our attention. We always see significance in the other person's ability, but we seldom have confidence and see significance in what we have. Because we always play down the abilities that we have. If I had what they had, if I can do what they can do, if I had their ability, but you have yours. So the confident person looks inward and said, listen, this is all I've got, but I'm going to use it. I remember reading years ago, Ginger and I were in Bulgaria one time, and we did a road trip. We got good friends. That's why it's C3 Stars Agora now. It's a C3 church in Bulgaria. Lubo and Tanya Petkov. We've known them for years, 16 years. So we did a road trip. We drove from Bulgaria to Greece. From Greece, we drove to Albania. From Albania, we drove to Macedonia. And then back to Bulgaria. Now, I wanted to go to Albania. That portion of the world is called the Baltic nations. Baltic means mountains, mountainous. There's 9 of them. I wanted to go to Albania. The reason why I wanted to go to Albania today is a Muslim, but I wanted to go to Albania. The reason why I wanted to go to Albania is because I read about a young girl by the name of Agnes. Agnes was amazing. When she was 19 years old, she had a moment with God, an epiphany. Something happened. She couldn't understand it. She didn't recognize what it was, and so she struggled with it. When she was 30 years old, she left Albania for a short period of time, went to Ireland, and had another moment, an encounter with God. The encounter with God was so dramatic that she saw her future. She ended up in Calcutta, India. She changed her name from Agnes to Mother Teresa. The only gift that she had is to give dignity to the dying. She said every human being deserves to know God before they die. She walked the streets of Calcutta. She took the dying off the streets and put life inside of them. Before she died, there wasn't a president, a prime minister, a king in the world that didn't know the name Mother Teresa. It's an amazing, amazing woman. She was about this tall, lived well into her 80s. I was driving through the streets of Calcutta one time in a taxi, and I saw Sisters of Charity. That was her organization. I told the guy driver, I said, stop. I said, I'm going in. I had a few guys with me. We had a camera. I ran in there. She had been dead just a short time. They had her casket there. I went on the head of that casket. I said, get the camera out, film me. I'm making some video footage right here. I was going nuts. These nuns all around. And then after I finished, I looked at signs and said, no video, no video, no video. I said, too late. It's easier to get forgiveness than it is permission. I'm taking it. Oh, it was amazing. Amazing. You see, my point is simple. Here's a woman born. Albania is the poorest of all the Balkan nations. She was from a poor nation. She was a poor parents, but she had a moment with God. And that moment with God unveiled her purpose in life. She took what did she have? She had a heart. That's what she had. She had a desire, a passion, something burning on the inside of her to take a lowly, a beggar in the street, people dying by the tens of thousands, and give dignity and lead them to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. And she worked 18 hours a day into her 80s because she had something. That's all. We tend to bury what we have. We have to gain the confidence to say, I don't care what it looks like, I'm going to take what I have and I'm going to use it with everything I've got. When Ginger and I first started the church years ago, 1980, I thought to myself, what do I have? I never went to Bible school. Never went. I just got saved. And I just OD'd on cassette tapes. That's all I did. I heard him 6 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's what I did. Heard him all constantly. A year and a half, we planted a church. Had no idea what I was doing. None. Absolutely none. And I had 35 people, 34 women and one man on an Indian reservation. Nobody does that. I mean, everything was wrong. I did everything backwards. I didn't, there was no science behind it. There was no logic behind it. We just did it. And it worked. And I thought to myself, I don't have any talents. I don't sing. I don't play instrument. I don't do any of that stuff. And I realized the only thing I got, the only thing I know, the only thing I've got is I can yell, I can hit, and I can tell a story. That's it. So I just yelled, hit, told stories. Yelled, hit, told stories. Taking me to 70 nations. She was confident. The first thing I got to hurry up. She was confident. 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 Second thing, if we want to make a difference, we got to be credible. Nobody will listen to people that aren't credible. I don't know what this girl did. It doesn't say, but I promise you, she was credible. She was credible. Now listen to me. What does it mean to be credible? How do you become credible? Our work, W-O-R-K, it's not a four-letter, it's a good four-letter word. I love what Pastor Claude shared a little while ago. Our work, God loves work. He loves us so much, he gave 6 days, he said, to do it. I don't know why people don't like work. Work is the greatest gift given to mankind outside of salvation. When you take a person's ability to work, you've taken their life away from them. Work creates expression. It's the mechanism that gets out of me everything God put in me. That's why people die. Men die 6 years after retirement. Women are the only ones that live longer. The only reason why they live longer is because of the old adage that a woman's work is never done. They don't stop working. You can't take a day off from retirement. You'll get that one someday. Are you listening to what I'm saying? How does work create credibility? Because everything I do through work is a self-portrait of myself. I am painting me. If you told me to dig a hole 1 meter by 1 meter by 1 meter, it better be 1 meter by 1 meter by 1 meter. 1 meter this way, 1 meter this way, and 1 meter this way. And if it moves itself in, that hole. You see, I'm going to tell you something. I used to teach biblical economics at a college level. And one of the things I would tell young people all the time, I said, how many people in here are are self-employed, and you'd always have just a few hands go up. Then I would ask them, how many people in there are employed by somebody else? That 80% of the hands go up. And I said, you're wrong. The latter group is wrong. W-R-O-N-G. G. Wrong. You say, what do you mean? I'm employed by... No, you're not. Every human being is self-employed. Because I got another question for you. When you leave a job, when you do a job, whose picture do you paint every single day when you're working? The company's or yours? You are painting a portrait of you through your work. That's what creates credibility. I don't create credibility because I can talk. I create credibility because my work is a reflection of me. It's a self-portrait, a self-portrait of the way I see me. And if I'm slack in my work, I'm slack in my character, because my work is my outward expression of the way I see me. It's what creates my credibility in life. So you never show up. You never show up late. You never leave early. And when you're asked to do something, you do it. You do it to the degree that it reflects who you are. If it's sloppy, you're sloppy. If it's half, I'm not going to use the other side of that word. I'm tempted to. If it's half-ass, you're half-ass. I mean, I'm telling you right now. Oh, yeah, I mean it. Dear God, I wouldn't say that in any church. But you hear, you know what I'm talking about? I don't care what it is. Well, they don't treat me right. Stop it. Well, I don't get paid enough. Do the better. I'm telling you something. If you and I will put our heart into what we do, you're not painting a picture of them. You're painting a picture of you. Credibility comes when I put my heart behind what I do. I'm going to do. That's why the Bible said, do your work as unto God. That's a powerful thought. God loves work. It's the expression of Him. It's the expression of ourselves. Got to be credible. Got to hurry up. Got to be credible. Number three, if we want to make a difference, speak to people's needs. Their hurts. She spoke to a need. I know somebody. I know a prophet. She could see the pain. She could see the deterioration of Naaman. She could see the agony of his wife. She felt their pain. And she said, I know somebody that can heal. Speak. Everybody's got a pain. We had one of our associate pastors, father, was named Mr. Groomer. Mr. Groomer had a heart attack and a stroke back to back. He was so debilitated that he sat on the edge of his son, told us. He sat on the edge of bed and stared at a wall for 2 years. Mind gone, everything gone. So his son brought him out to where we were, to the church, moved him. He lived in West Texas and moved him. And when he started coming to church, he was on 30 pharmaceutical drugs a day, 30. I don't know how you handle that. It was called a cocktail, because you take them and you smash them and you mix them with crackers and milk and you drink them. So Ginger walked up to him one day, never forgot. And she said, Mr. Groomer, I need you. You know what that does to somebody? Speak to people's needs. I need you. You need me? Yeah, I need you. I need you to run our tape. Back then, they had cassette tapes. We had banks of them. I need you to run this whole thing. Oh, no, he said, I can't do that. Yes, you can. No. He said, I don't know when I'm going to wake up in the morning. I just take these drugs. I don't know when I'm going to wake. She said, that's fine. Whenever you get up, just come on in. Well, I don't know how long I can stay. I'm not coherent. She said, well, fine. If you want to go home, then go home. She kept prodding him. He started coming to church. Every day, showing up, he started helping. He started working. An amazing thing happened. He started getting well. His mind cleared up. The drugs lessened. Before he died, he walked up to my wife and he said, I'm so thankful you added years to my life. She gave him purpose, and purpose healed him. speak to people's needs. One last thought. If we want to make a difference, do the small things. The small things. About twice a year, we would have something in the church called Bring a Friend Sunday. I told people, I said, don't invite people. An invitation's cheap. Because I don't have to come with an invitation. If you invite me to your house, I can say, gosh, I'd love to come, but I can't. But if you tell me to come, if you say I'm bringing you to my house, I've lost my choice. I said, don't invite people. There's four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. In all those Gospels, I used to call them the unnamed heroes of the Bible. It says, and they brought. It doesn't say who they are. And they brought. And it never said they invited. It said they brought. So I told people, bring. Don't invite, bring. Just walk up to somebody, a friend, a coworker. Say, this Sunday, I'm bringing you to church. I'm going to take you out to lunch afterwards. You're coming. So one of the guys that was a member, his coworker was named Ernesto Gomez. He worked for the government. You can't get fired when you work for the government. Ernesto was an alcoholic. He drank a fifth of vodka a day. The reason why he was an alcoholic is because during the Vietnam War, he lied on his age. He entered the Navy at the age of 17, and he became one of the original Navy SEALs in the United States, one of the most elite fighting forces that exist in America. He was a bona fide Navy SEAL, one of the original ones. But that's not always good. They brought him to Vietnam. He was smaller in stature, so he became a tunnel rat. Now, you got to understand, the Viet Cong lived in tunnels. They built massive tunnels underground. They were prepared to live there for 40 years. They would take the Navy SEALs that were the smallest ones and they would run them down those holes. Now that meant that either you're coming out or you're not coming out. Somebody's going to lose their life, either you or them. Ernesto did 3 consecutive tours in Vietnam. Those 27 months. One tour will wipe you out. He did 3, back to back. At the worst, the height of the war, he had to crawl in those tunnels. He never talked about it, other than the fact you can read between the lines. When he came out, he was messed up. He was married. He blew up his marriage. He ended up living in San Francisco. You might not get this, but some of you that have been around a while will. His next-door neighbor was Anton LaVey. Anton LaVey wrote the Satanic Bible. That was his neighbor. He was screwed up. He ends up in our city. He gets a job for the government. No marriage. Alcoholic. No future. At that moment, one small act. Ernesto, I'm bringing you to church this Sunday. I said, I'm not going. He said, no, I've already decided you are. I just got to know what time to pick you up because you're coming. I'm bringing you. He wouldn't let up on him. 3 days went by. Told him every day. The third day, Ernesto finally said, okay, leave me alone. I'll go once and then back off. He went that one Sunday. He said, I don't know when it happened, how it happened, but in the middle of that service, he said, it was like something opened up and all the hatred, all the garbage, all the filth came out of me. Ernesto gave his life to Jesus. He became our children's church pastor. He married Miss New Mexico. I did the wedding. Ernesto did good. Vivian. To this day, he stays in constant contact with us. That was years ago. He's the associate pastor of a church in South Texas. He absolutely loves God with all of his heart, and he credits everything that's happened to him to that one moment in time because one small act could make a difference.
This is the end of the podcast. For more information about C3 Rockingham, please visit www.c3r.org.au or call us on 9524 5055.